This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 74 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Happy New Year, Max.
Yes, same to you, David. We're making our way through the holidays pretty successfully. And I understand that you had a little bit of an interesting present.
I actually got two. One, we got a listener that sent us a UAV Digest t-shirt that I'm quite proud of that says, "Keep calm and drone on." But more importantly, my wife gave me a Estes Synchro Micro Quadcopter. Now, when I opened up the box, I said, "Oh my God, my wife got me a drone." And then she properly corrected me and said, "No, I got you a quadcopter." So clearly the universe we podcast in is rubbing off on our wives. And while we're at it, I guess we should give a shout out to Drone Mama for doing her 25th show notes. So really thankful to her, considering that's one third of all of our episodes.
Yeah, that's right. She's very excited to be helping us out in this way. And it's a great time saver. She puts together the show notes and does the publishing on WordPress. So we really want to thank her for her contribution. You can follow her on Twitter where she's Drone Mama.
So, I guess we should get started. We got a heavy news week. Now, folks, unfortunately, we're releasing this after the first of the year, but we're recording this on the 30th of December, 2014. So, if the FAA wants to piss us off tomorrow, they'll release the notice of proposed rulemaking about small UAVs, because they said it was going to be the end of the year. But I'm wouldn't take that bet, would you, Max?
No. I think we're going to go ahead and declare that the NPRM did not come out in 2014, and hopefully they won't embarrass us.
So it's the end of the year and no RPM. Christmas evidently was drone Armageddon. We've got a lot of stories about the influx of drones entering the airspace because of Christmas. It's the end of the world because we can say drone, the word drone again. Rules, rules, laws, rules, and more rules. Video of the week and listener mail. So I guess we better get started. It's a heavy news week.
First item comes from Aviation Week. This is no firm date for UAV rules as FAA and industry launch safety campaign. So this relates back to what you were saying, David, about the number of quadcopters, drones, RC toys, whatever you want to call them, that entered the people's hot little hands after this past holiday season. And the FAA and some other groups want to make sure that people are aware of the things they need to be aware of so that they can fly safely.
I was very, very pleased when this came out, and it came out in multiple notices. The FAA, the Small UAV Coalition, the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, or AUVSI, and the Academy of Model Aeronautics. They got together, and there's a website called Know Before You Fly, or knowbeforeyoufly.org.
It's a very simple little site, and it has some very basic but very useful information for new flyers. And it's kind of the usual stuff. It's stay below 400 feet, only fly line of sight, stay away from people and buildings and structures and airports and things. But, you know, David, we see all around us indications that a lot of people are flying and aren't aware of these very basic safety measures.
Including yours truly, violated the the airport rule, since I live less than a mile away from one. When I flew my little quadcopter, I was violating FAA airspace rules, but in fact, it was indoors, so I think I'm pretty safe on that.
I think you're okay.
Yeah, FAA Administrator Huerta, number one, on 12/22, didn't commit a date for the notice of proposed rulemaking, which, not surprised. But he also commented, quote, "Overwhelming majority of users are operating safely. But that agency also knows that there are rogue actors and others who are not familiar with the rules." And I really think the industry and such is really scared about the third group of people, those who are not familiar with the rules. You know, we've talked about this in the past, that when my wife used to teach English and she'd have somebody plagiarizing, I would say, were they dumb or were they stupid? And the answer was, if they were dumb, it means they didn't really know what the hell they were doing. If they were stupid, they deliberately plagiarized. So it's kind of the same thing. We know there are people out there, and our video of the week is testimony to this, of people who do things deliberately to push the envelope. But there are other people who got a quadcopter, and it was kind of amazing. We were recording last night, and there were videos popping up for Airplane Geeks of people having quadcopters stuck in trees, quadcopters stuck in houses, people getting hit in the head by quadcopters. And it's less than a week after Christmas. While presented as toys, they're really not toys. Even my little quadcopter gave me a nasty finger bite when I was launching it from my hand. So it clearly, there's a lot going on there.
And this came out in our next article. This was from the twice.com. Booming drone sales creates safety risk. And there's a quote here from the director of business development at the Unmanned Vehicle University, Daryl Slaughter. And I think this is a pretty good quote, David. I think he kind of characterizes this pretty well.
Yeah, the quote is, the drone industry cannot afford any mishaps at this time, especially at this stage in the industry's life cycle. People must realize that many of the UAVs given as gifts this year are not toys. Many are capable of causing serious injury and damage to property. People will get hurt if these potentially dangerous devices are operated in an unsafe manner. Training is important if you're flying a 3995 micro quad to a DJI Phantom. And I think the industry needs to work on this a little, but the hobbyist drones are presented as ready to fly, easy to fly, and they're not really presenting them as, say, a radio control aircraft. And a lot of the radio control aircraft you had to build first. So you grew to understand the aircraft as you built it. This, you take it out of the box, load up the batteries, and we know there's danger. The batteries are challenging, and away you go. And It's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully nobody does something really stupid.
Oh, yes, and hopefully nobody gets seriously injured as a result, again, from just this lack of awareness. So going back to the website we mentioned, the knowbeforeyoufly.org site, I think it's maybe some good advice that for all of us, as we see our friends, our relatives, our neighbors unboxing their new quadcopters and starting to fly, that I think we should communicate to them that they might want to take a quick look at this website and just get some basic awareness. Of course, there's a lot more training and other issues as well, but at least the awareness is a start.
Yeah, and we are working to get the director of the Academy of Model Aeronautics on, which hopefully will happen in January, to talk about how they can help people learning. So I guess our new cause celeb, since our old one got shot down, will be go out and tell your friends how to safely fly a UAV. And the last one was, we've come a long way in 74 episodes, Max.
Oh, we sure have.
Back in our original episode, we worked very hard not to say the word drone, and we were going to commit ourselves to not saying the word drone, because the AUVSI August 2013 convention made news because their Wi-Fi password was "don't say drones."
Yeah, it was kind of hard not to say the word drone, use the D word, because it really had started to enter the popular vernacular. And we tried for a little while, but really not too long, David, before we kind of said, well, maybe there's a different strategy. Maybe the strategy is, since the word has been co-opted by the press and the public, let's embrace it. And as we start to talk about the good uses, the positive uses for unmanned vehicles, that maybe we can actually alter the perception of the word drone. Well, I guess that some others are starting to view it the same way.
Yeah, Michael Toscano, during the press conference that with the FAA about the Know Before You Fly release, used the word drone four times. Toscano then, when he was asked, because he was, August 2013, was very much against using the word drone and wanted... Toscano said, people now are going to get drones, quote unquote, for the holidays, and they're not talking about weaponized predators and reapers. And we did it. I guess I can stop recording this show, because all I wanted to do was to make sure that people understood that the word drone did not just mean a predator firing a hellfire. And evidently, the rest of the industry is sort of catching up with that, and maybe we're right. We've taken back the word and made it our own instead of letting somebody else use it as a label.
Right.
So let's get to our weekly dose of rules, laws, etc. And this was from Forbes.com. Industry proposes a micro drone rule as regulatory deadline looms. Well, we already know that the deadline is loomed and gone. But the UAS America Fund has filed a petition with the FAA proposing regulations for very small UASs for non-recreational purposes.
I think this is fascinating and worth talking about from a couple of standpoints. The UAS America Fund was created to fund the development, the advancement of unmanned technologies in the United States. And they have done a lot of work, apparently, using FAA data, doing some analysis, and they've come up with a pretty comprehensive proposal for regulations of unmanned aircraft. And they presented this to the FAA in the form of a petition. And there's a nice graphic, a chart, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes that kind of captures that. And it's worth looking at. But they have a number of different categories, recreational categories and commercial categories, which they talk to as taking a phased kind of approach to regulation. And there's really a lot of good thought in this, I think. I don't know, David, did you have the same reaction to this?
My reaction to this was, this made too much sense. The FAA would never go for it. When you see the chart, folks, it's very clear. It's very well thought out. It's incremental. It's not trying to plug every square peg into a round hole. There are people who are going to fly drones because they got it for Christmas and they're going to fly it for a couple of weeks and it'll never be flown again. There are people who are going to become hobbyists and photographers who are going to want to fly first-person view and BLOS, which is beyond line of sight. And then there are going to be people who want to do commercial operations. And the more sophisticated the commercial operation, needless to say, the more training, the more requirements, the more regulation will be for each of those steps as you go higher. It really does make sense. And they are talking about things like pilot's licenses now, or a UAS certificate. And they're also talking about things like insurance. You know, these are the requirements. If you want to go to this level, you need all of these requirements, you know, and it's quite well thought out. I agree with you, Max.
And one of the features of this is that there are categories dealing with, as we said, you know, very small UAS, under 3 pounds. And the argument they make is that, you know, those are the things that really need, you know, very limited regulations, very limited requirements. If you're flying something under 3 pounds, below 400 feet, 5 miles from an airport, that sort of thing, that essentially it's saying, oh, well, let's just keep this as a recreational flight, hobbyist kind of a flight, and stay away from sort of oppressive regulations. But then it looks at kind of commercial categories. So there's a commercial flights category 1A. It's got still got minimal regulations, but this would be applied to such things as aerial photography, small-scale precision agriculture, firefighting, insurance investigation, things like that. Then moves up to a Category 2, aerial imaging, surveys, agriculture, etc. And then it continues, commercial Category 3, where you've got BLOS flights for search and rescue, infrastructure inspection, agricultural monitoring. And then the fourth category of commercial, Category 4, which is unrestricted. You can, you know, you're limited only by the operating certificates of the pilots and the aircraft. So it's an interesting a look at this. And as we mentioned, they have done a lot of analysis and looked at data. They took a risk based approach to creating this. The thing that I kind of wonder about is, okay, so this looks like some good thinking, clearly a good basis for conversation. But how does this fit in with what the FAA is already working on and hopefully will propose soon? You know, how does this all come together? Do we have a situation where we have different sort of isolated groups creating you know, really good solutions or doing some good analysis, some good study? How is all this coming together in a way that moves us all forward? That part of it's not clear to me.
Well, evidently there is a legal way to do it because they did propose this to the FAA. So hopefully the FAA, when they do release the notices out and we start to go down the path, that they are open to other ideas. And in a perfect world, it would be the best of everything, and you hash it out. And this is a really good start. I have to give Brendan a shout out, Brendan Schulman, who is Drone Laws on Twitter. And if you're in this industry and you're not following him on Twitter, you got a real problem.
Yes.
He's really good. And it's well thought. It really is well thought out and does some things that we haven't seen other suggestions do. And that's answer a lot of the questions. And it's not throwing one big blob at the wall and hoping it sticks.
Yeah.
We really need to show this to our resident dronophobe, Rob, and see if he would be satisfied with this. But let's get on to some more regulations.
In the privacy arena.
Yeah, well, this was going to happen too. Senator John D. Rockefeller IV, who is a Democrat from West Virginia, according to UASmagazine.com, proposed a UAS Privacy Act. The proposed law would require the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, to set up privacy websites for all commercial UAV operators where privacy policies are posted, including information about the circumstances under which the UAS would be operated, specific purposes of the images, data and other identifying information that would be collected, measures to be taken to anonymize and aggregate the information and contact information. Now, I don't know if most people know this, but I work in the insurance industry. And basically, I read this and went, oh, it's my HIPAA privacy notice that I send out to everybody every year, which is, what do we do with your information? How do we disclose it? Who do we give it to? How do we use it? This is basically HIPAA for drones. It really is, which, if you don't know what HIPAA is, it's the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1986. And it basically tells you, and I'm sure most of you, as I've always said, will get the letter from your insurance company. It will immediately go in the trash can. I don't need to know this, but it's, and we spend millions of dollars to send these things out. But it is kind of important. It does tell you what your rights are, what your information is, and how to complain if you think you're being violated. My only problem with this is it's getting another federal agency involved with UAVs.
The FTC.
The FTC as well, you know, and we're getting quite the alphabet soup involving UAVs. We've had the FCC, the FTC, the DOT, and the FAA. which just proves what kind of spectrum UAVs and drones touch. But it's just one more layer of regulation. I kind of agree with what this is proposing, but that being said, do we need another set of rules?
Another aspect of this is here we are seeing this proposal introduced at the end of the year. And next year, the composition of the House and the Senate change quite a bit. And, you know, this may be more of a move to, you know, sort of make a point or look good rather than something that's actually going to move forward. I think it's, you know, it's very difficult for something proposed at the end of this year to make any headway next year when we have all the new elected officials in office. But it's, you know, it's a stake in the ground, and it's certainly a topic that needs to be addressed in a really good, effective way. I don't know if this is it or not, but it's a topic that's going to come up and probably will continue to come up for quite a while.
For the general public, it's a huge concern.
Yes. It,
the general public doesn't really worry about drones flying into airplanes. The general public worries about their next door neighbor videotaping them sunbathing in their backyard. And I really don't mind the approach they're taking, considering I do it every year. It's part of my industry. But again, there's got to be some sort of minimizing the regulation so that it can grow successfully instead of printing out thousands and thousands of reams of paper only to get thrown out or hopefully recycled.
Well, if we take it up to a bigger level, larger than just the U.S., we see recently some action on the part of ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization.
Yeah, I actually thought this was kind of interesting because we tend to be very hard on the FAA, but if you read this article, it sort of sounds like ICAO was looking to us for leadership on what they call remotely piloted aircraft systems, RPASs. So they came to the United States and went out to California and talking about what else? Regulation.
Yeah, they have this technical body. It's called the RPAS panel. It is made up of almost 100 different representatives, experts from industry and different countries. Now, that whole group didn't come and visit the U.S. It was a smaller delegation on a fact-finding mission. I think they want to, you know, they're working to develop standards that could be applied globally. So they want to look at what are the different, you know, member countries doing in this area. I guess they spent a lot of time with NASA and some other organizations kind of reviewing things. But I kind of got the sense from reading this that they were maybe more interested in the larger end of the scale, looking at integration of manned and unmanned aircraft. But again, looking at the sort of the larger unmanned aircraft, not necessarily the smaller things that are often the subject.
You mean the P word, Predator?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Integration of those larger aircraft have been, and yes, I called them aircraft, folks, that's where the real challenges are going to be, is because those are the ones where you're going to get the most bang for your buck, especially if you're doing things like cargo. You're going to want a large airplane, you know? So it's interesting. We'll have to follow up and see what ICAO comes up with. And, well, since we were out west, I don't know what to make of this story. This is old school, bad drone reporting. This is the kind of story that used to make Max and I's head explode.
Yeah, the headline of this is, well, it grabs your attention. This is from Fox News or a Fox affiliate in Las Vegas. First Nevada drone crashes second into FAA test flight. All right. Well, that sounds really bad, doesn't it, David?
Boy, I clicked open this quick when we got it in the email from one of our listeners. Yeah. Okay.
It's not really as bad as it sounds, or at least I don't think it is.
The Magpie, which, by the way, congratulations, as of last week, was certified by the FAA and has got their certificate of author, was hand-launched in this very large press, you know, the people were there in the suits, and they were all there to celebrate this new beginning of Nevada testing UAVs and what it's going to do for the industry. And the Magpie got tossed into the air and fell nose first about 2 feet away from the guy that threw it in the air.
Yeah, you could hardly call it a crash. I mean, okay, maybe technically it was. I don't think the thing ever achieved aerodynamic flight. The way I look at this video is, you know, it's a hand-launched UAV, but it just kind of lands a few feet in front of the guy. I mean, it never really got aerodynamically into the air. But
it made a great rock.
That's exactly what it looked like. It looked like somebody threw a rock to the air. But you know, now we have this dramatic headline. Certainly, it's an amazingly or enormously embarrassing kind of situation. This wasn't the first flight of the Magpie. They had flown it many times before, but this was the first official flight from the test site. And you know, the governor speaks and the whole thing, and then it makes this nosedive into the dirt. Kind of unfortunate. They say that this was a problem with an electrical controller issue. It just looks bad, and the press kind of picks that up, and off they run.
Okay. Remember what I said about, you know, now that the press has figured out it's not all predators and reapers,
yes,
that I can give up doing the show? It's stories like this that remind me that we need to keep doing the show. We've got one last military aviation news, and that's the, this was from CNN.com. It's actually a video, but the Navy flew the MQ-8C Fire Scout for the system for the first time off the Jason Dunham. And that was off of Norfolk. Now, the MQ-8B has been flying off of frigates now and destroyers for quite a few years. However, the MQ-8C is the one based on the Bell Jet Ranger. It's a full-size helicopter with the Fire Scout avionics in it.
So what's the B? What's the MQ?
The B is a smaller little hummingbird size unmanned vehicle. And I guess what we'll do is we'll put links to the show notes. But what the Navy did was then took a full scale helicopter, a Bell, and took the avionics from the MQ-8B and put those avionics and controls into the full-size helicopter. So they got a exponential growth in the vehicle for more fuel, for more endurance, for more weapons carriage, etc. So basically they have an unmanned full-size helicopter like you would see flying around your local radio station. So we'll put initial links in the show notes so you can see the difference, but it's quite an accomplishment. And I got to say, for 2014, the Navy did pretty good. We've got, before the end of the year, we got the Fire Scout, the MQ-8C launch off of a ship. And we also had the U-class, the X-47, do multiple trips off of ships this year. So good for the Navy in pushing ahead the drone envelope.
Yeah, was a good year for the Navy. Now, David, tell us about this video of the week that we have.
The Black Sheep Christmas special. It was originally published on December 23rd, 2012, and I've captioned this, "What Not to Do with Your Drone." It was taken from a flight near Paris while attending Les Web 2012. And granted, it's an amazing piece of flying.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it very much is. But if, you know, if you watched Trappy's you know, Virginia video that's the subject of the FAA fine, this goes way, way beyond that.
To the point where they landed on a moving truck. They not quite dive bomb a police officer, but pretty damn close. And flying it in a place that you should not even remotely, between buildings.
Near people, pedestrians near, on the street.
It's just
not recommended. And, you know, okay, so clearly there's some, you know, great piloting involved in this. I don't question the technical skill of the operator here. But in terms of it being safe to operate this way, I just really have my doubts. And I certainly don't think it's going to do anything to dissuade other people who might see this from attempting similar kinds of flying. And, you know, they may not have anywhere near the qualifications or the skills that, you know, that we see here. So,
well, I guess that's where I was sort of going with this. We talk about setting examples for our Christmas Dromageddon, where we have all of these people, right? So what are they going to do? Let's go look at YouTube. Now, Black Sheep, if you Google drone on YouTube, Black Sheep are going to come up as one of the top hits. So people are going to see it. And, oh, wow, look at what I... No, it's not what you can do. And there's no even disclaimer on it saying, you know, don't try this at home or anything like that. So watch the video, and maybe Max and I are overthinking it, but send us your feedback if you agree or disagree, but not the message we want to present to our newly discovered drone operators.
All right, David, do we have time for some feedback quickly?
Yeah, I guess we got some real quick ones. This again comes with Christmas, and this was from Neil. And I thought this was an interesting, a proposed $50,000 fine for anyone flying in a fire zone. With Christmas comes many UAVs, and I think they're starting to panic down here. Now, Neil is from Australia, and we'll provide a link to abc.net.au. And it was talking about educating everybody. And that I guess, has been the theme over the last couple of weeks is, you know, Christmas is here. People are going to get these things, and how do we educate them, and how do we get the message out?
And we also heard from Tim. Now, Tim attended a keynote speech at the World Aviation Training Conference, and he actually had an opportunity to ask FAA Administrator Huerta to comment on the challenges of UAS rulemaking. Huerta gave kind of a standard sort of response, though, didn't he?
Tim was kind of disappointed. I didn't really think that a high-profile speaker would speak off the cuff, but his lack of any newer than 4 months information makes me think these guys are not only behind the power curve, i.e. the NTSB ruling, but they are necessarily hopelessly behind the power curve. Tim, he's in a rock and a hard place. I'll give the administrator the benefit of the doubt. You know, he doesn't want to, especially in an environment like that, any sort of off-the-cuff comment could be breaking news, good or bad. But thanks for writing in. And last but not least, we had a listener write in about the bad experience he had with a certain well-known organization providing UAV operator training. After devoting 3 days and spending a lot of money, he was very dissatisfied with what he received. So he sort of reached out with a question, which was, has anybody else taken any of these certification classes? And what's involved? And were they satisfied with the product? And I guess the next thing we need to start thinking about is, how do we accreditate these companies that are providing accreditation or certification?
Yeah, because I think any way you look at it, we're going to see some type of operator, some kind of pilot certification, the training required for operation for certain kinds of UAVs and certain kinds of missions. So we've already seen some organizations step up and start to provide training, and I think that we're going to see a lot more of that when we get regulations that require it. And so maybe the issue here is, well, how do we make sure that we're getting a quality training? What do we have in place, if anything, that can provide that kind of accreditation for training providers?
Well, I guess that should wrap it up, huh, Max?
That wraps up episode 74. I want to thank you all for listening. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes that Drone Mama is going to put up there for this episode, you can visit theuavdigest.com/74.
Yeah, and don't forget, we're on Twitter at theuavdigest, on Facebook, which is UAV Digest, on Google Plus, UAV Digest. We don't often mention that. And of course, we want your emails. Max and I read them. You know, we might not get to you right away, but we will get back to you. It's feedback at theuavdigest.com. of course, if you love us, leave us a review on iTunes as well as Stitcher.com. If you want some swag, try cafepress.com/theUAVDigest. And you could always help our little project by making a donation by going to theUAVDigest.com and click the donate button, or you can go to patreon.com/theUAVDigest.
And again, we want to thank you all for listening. Thanks for the great time we had in 2014 bringing this program to you. We look forward to continuing it in 2015.
So with that, I'm David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening and look forward to a great 2015.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.